wanted to take a second and recognize my sponsors this week. You know, Gatelisby's Million Dollar Arbitrage as Edge and List Group. That's a mouthful. It is. But guess what? It's a great opportunity. You know, you can build a big Amazon business. You don't need a lot of capital when you start. I mean, we all started, you know, most of us started selling books. And then you move into retail arbitrage. That is the place that you can turn your money the fastest in online arbitrage. And so by having that skill set, by learning those skill sets, you can get the best bang for your buck. And so Gaze Group will help you learn online arbitrage. It's more than just a list service. They're going to give you a whole bunch of actionable inventory every single day, right? Monday through Friday. However, there's also a mentorship that goes on. And that mentorship is so important because sometimes it's great to know what to buy, but it's more important to understand why to buy it. Because that's that, you know, learning to fish or just getting fed. You know, you really want to learn because ultimately you want to strike it on your own. And this is a great way to do it. So how about 7 days free trial? How about a free trial, right? Very, very cool. So it's amazingfreedom.com/ this is a mouthful. The word momentum, you got to use a hyphen and you put in the word arbitrage. So it's amazingfreedom.com/momentum-arbitrage. And you're going to get a free trial in Gaze Group. You got to tell her I sent you, right? I'll also have the link in the episode. But it's such a great opportunity. So she is amazing, amazing. I'm in that group, so you'll see me there. An amazing, amazing person who's there to answer your questions, who's there to help lead you and help guide you. And that's what Gay does. She does it every single day. The testimonials are real. Go take a look. You will be blown away. And again, it's a free trial. I have the link on this episode. Reach in. You know, Seller Labs, Jeff Cohen and the team, they have blown me away with this scope project. We use this all the time for our business. We do a lot of private label. We also do a lot of wholesale and wholesale bundles, you know, or multi-packs, that kind of thing, which a lot of people do. But we use scope to help us figure out what are the keywords. And so it's really simple. You basically figure out where you're going to sell, what you're going to sell, what category, find that like product, find the top couple sellers, and find their keywords. Boom, magic, there you go. You copy the best because it's working. And guess what? That's a proof of concept, and scope allows you to do that. So it's sellerlabs.com/scope, sellerlabs.com/scope. Use the code word momentum, and you're going to get couple days free trial, and you're going to save a little bit of money, and you're going to get some free keywords. It's worth every penny. I'm in that group. Come and check me out. Sellerlabs.com/scope. Again, use the word momentum. Solutions for e-commerce. Karen Locker. Great, great, great group. I've been using them for a long time. I guess it's over 2 years, and I'm in there and I pay just like everybody else. Yes, she's a sponsor of my show, but she makes me pay, and I got the same $50 discount that you can get. Oh, by the way, you're going to get that through my link and my link only. Oh, and you're also going to get the free inventory health analysis. Great way to start 2018. Get your inventory in line, and Karen will help you do that. We use them for everything. I mean, basically, long-term storage fees coming up. Guess what? She'll evaluate, she'll make some recommendations, and I'll say, yep, check, 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 take these out, this, return, blah, 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 and magically it's done. I love it, love it, love it. I love the fact that they take and get rid of stranded inventory for me. I see it in there, and then next time I go in and it's gone. Love it, love it, love it. Got an IP infringement? She's going to help you work your way through that. This is the kind of service that you get from Karen Locker. That's solutions for, the number four, e-commerce, solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum, right? So you got a /momentum, and you're going to save $50 a month. $600 a year by just clicking that link. She pays me. I don't want to hide that. I never do. I'm always upfront about that. But it doesn't cost you anything additional, and you're going to get that inventory health report. The only way you get that is through my link, solutions, the number four, ecommerce.com/momentum.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 270, Anna Hill. Now, you know that I've had Anna on my show a couple of times, and the reason I bring her back, it's kind of become our annual thing, is really to close out the year and start the new year, and start it out right. And she's in such high demand, I have to wait to get her on now because she's so popular, because she's a plain speaker. She talks your language, because guess what? She's a seller. She's been selling for a long time. She knows what she's doing. So she knows the ins and outs, and that's why people want to talk with her. And so we're fortunate to get her back. And man, oh man, I think we get to such a cool place in the conversation. I think you're really all going to benefit. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. Very excited to have my guest back. She's a three-peat, and the reason is because she's smarter than I am, and she's a nerd, more of a nerd than I am, but she's also cooler than I am. I'll admit that to Anna Hill. Welcome back, Anna.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to our conversation today. And you're a nerd also.
I know. I'm a poser of a nerd though. Now I'm retired. You know, it's funny. Somebody was just asking me, "Hey, Steve, how's, I'm like, I have no clue. I'm not into it. I don't want to know, you know, please." They're selling the business, the building. And they were like, "Hey, would you come back?" No, not interested. But thank you. I appreciate it. You know, let me know how that goes. So this has kind of become our annual discussion about kind of closing out the year and starting the new year. So this is a couple of weeks into 2018 when this will run. But obviously they can still close out 2017 and do things right and really set themselves up for a great, great year. Because this is Steve's premise, and correct me if I'm wrong or if you don't agree, but I believe that the changes that are going on are going to continue to accelerate, and therefore the prepared are going to be able to adapt that much easier. Is that fair?
Oh, I completely agree with you. It's always been that way. I think that's just a truth of business in general. But I think you're right with the Amazon environment changing the way that it is and online sales in general. You just have to run a tight ship, and books are a really important part of that.
Well, it's the foundation. I mean, it really is. You know, Andy Slamons and I are sharing some space, and I'll coach him through, like, here, send this to your accountant. This payment goes here and this does this, because, you know, you really want to set up that foundation, right? And to make sure that that your books are fairly represented, because when you have a viable business, matter of fact, Liron just approached their group. There was somebody who was looking to sell their Amazon business. Now, this is a large, relatively large e-commerce business that's looking to sell, and they want some serious money for it, but it's got serious sales, and it's a private label business established with a lot of products. And yet, if they don't have a good set of books, guess what? Nobody's buying them, right?
Exactly.
You want to know what you're buying is sound, and the only way you're going to do that is by looking at a good set of financial statements. All right, so let's close out 2017. What should people be doing now to close out 2017? I understand this is 2 weeks too late for some people. I'm like, oh my God, I should have done this. Oh my God, I didn't run my reports, Anna. I forgot to run my reports on January 31st. I stayed up till 11:58, but man, I just couldn't. I drank one too many. I fell asleep. Does that mean it's over? My books are gone?
No, that is an urban legend.
Oh, it is a myth.
It's a myth. I think it used to be true several years ago, and there are certain reports that can only be run live. However, the report that sellers need that tells them how much inventory is on hand is available. You can get it months and months later.
It's months and months. It's there forever. It's in perpetuity. You know, do you remember the days? Now, I don't know how old of an accountant you were to go back and do year-end inventory and have to work on New Year's Day.
You know, I didn't have to work on New Year's Day, but I did work on Christmas Eve for 5 years at a client who closed for 2 weeks. They were having their party while we were counting stuff.
Oh, that's mean. That's just mean.
Terrible.
Yeah, that's just mean. You know, oh, we got pizza for you guys. Oh, excuse me, I got to get back. The caviar is getting.
Had like homemade drinks and presents, and it was awful.
And you're in there listening, and
counting.
Have worked so many New Year's Days forever, and it literally, you're just getting home from the party, and you're going in to count inventory. Oh, don't miss those days.
No, I don't either.
Today's day and age, you don't need to do that with Amazon either, right? So you can run a report today for what happened a couple weeks ago.
Okay. Exactly.
So that myth is broken. Now it's dispelled. So that's pretty important though, right?
It's very important. And I think it causes people stress because they don't know what the steps are, what they need to do to prepare for year end. So hopefully that alleviates some people's worry.
And I'll qualify this up front. I'm going to have links to Anna's group, which is a free group to join, where she gives away all these secrets. She does have some services she offers that she wants to sell, right? I mean, that's part of it, what she does. However, all this stuff she gives away for free, you don't even need to buy it. You would just buy time if you want to, you know, buy somebody's services. That's what she sells. But outside of that, she gives you the secrets for free.
Oh yeah, it's all in the group for free, and
she gives you journal entries for God's sake.
I do. Woohoo!
Nerds are like, wow, man, yeah. Okay, so we run our reports, we get our year-end numbers, and that's the end of it. But that's not the beginning of it, right? You kind of need the beginning inventory place to start too.
Right, and a lot of people think, well, what if I started this year? What's my beginning inventory? Well, it's zero if you started this year.
It's zero.
Yes, because you started with nothing and you build from there. If you don't know what your beginning inventory was and you've been in business for several years or more than 1 year, you can check on your prior year's tax return. You will see it on there. So all is not lost. You can get that number from several places if you don't have it.
So that's your starting place, right? Is really last year's tax return. That was the point in time. That was a snapshot of your business. That's your starting place. Then you look at the activity that happened throughout the year, and then you have an ending snapshot, and the difference is where you build these profit and losses, hopefully profits.
Exactly. Yes, because your inventory is either available for sale or sold. It's one or the other.
You know, one of the things that I saw you point out, and it's a valid thing to think about with, inventory in transit. And it's one of those things that most people don't think about, right? Mm-hmm. Where is the point of ownership, right? That used to be, I remember that, you know, back in the old days when I was an old nerd, that was a real issue for us. You know, who owns the inventory, right? Is it, mm-hmm. you know, back then, Freehand board, you know, all that kind of jazz, which I always forgot. But that was a big deal. And so what's the point that people want to pay attention to here?
Well, I think, you know, assuming that you have ownership of it when you pay for it, that mm-hmm. would be the point in time I would recognize it, because you have given money for inventory.
So even though it's on my way, I bought it, you know, week of Christmas week, right? I bought it. Mm-hmm. I was drunk from the party. I made a purchase. It's on its way, but I paid for it. Yes. I own it.
Exactly. Because you have, which you know this, what people do when they do that is they're exchanging one asset for another. You have turned cash into inventory. Or if you put it on credit, you've increased a liability to increase an asset. So you just want to reflect that properly.
Right. And that liability is important. So even if you paid for it with a credit card, right, and you didn't pay the credit card bill, you're still on the hook for it. So therefore, I always say this is the easiest way for people to understand. If your business went out of business today, do you have to pay that bill? Yes. Therefore, you owe it. So therefore, it needs to go on your books. And I think that's the easiest way to think about that. Who owns it? Right. You know, it's just simple to me.
I like that. That's great.
Yeah, it just always, I used to coach all my employees about that. I'm like, if we went out of business today, who do we owe money to? Well, guess mm-hmm. what? We need to make sure that that's recognized on our books. That's fair, right? And that's reasonable. Right. Okay. So we now have built this cost of goods, which is this complicated model that Anna breaks down in like five steps. It's like, run this report, do this, do that. And she gives that to you for free. And I'll put a link to it there. How about revenue? I didn't get a 1099 from Amazon yet, or eBay, or I don't know if Etsy sells one. I don't know who sends one. I don't know how that works. Do I have to report my income?
You do.
Oh,
this is another urban legend, another myth to dispel. This is great. I'm loving this myth-busting theme we have going. People have been told or have thought along the way, if they do not get a 1099, they do not have any tax liability. And that is not true. If you make sales, you need to consider whether or not you have tax liability, even if you don't get a 1099.
And it's pretty important, because, you know, you bought something for $100 and you sold it for $150. And Amazon took their third, as generous as they are, right? Now mm-hmm. you're at a loss. But here, let's just say you made a few bucks, but you hadn't paid taxes on it. So when, you know, and it depends on, you know, here people margins, you know, they look at their profit when they buy something. Oh man, I'm at Target's end cap. And if I buy all these, I'm going to make $750,000. Ooh, business is good. Or then you see the next guy say, I bought all these at Target. I sold some of them. I made $100. And then you see the next guy that says, you know, well, I made $100, but now I got to pay taxes on it. Now I'm going to break even. And that's a real thing to consider. Tax consequences are real.
They are. And they can add up when you don't expect it, which is why if you have your books in order and keep up with them throughout the year, you will not be surprised.
You won't be surprised. And you also have an obligation, right? So, you know, right. If you do monthly financials, that's great, even quarterly at least.
Right.
Therefore, you make quarterly deposits. You're required to. And that quarterly deposit of taxes, then at the end of the year, you know, my accountant, because Steve doesn't do his own taxes anymore, says to me, Steve, did you make the quarterly deposits we sent you to make? And I'm like, yeah, of course we did. Okay. Mm-hmm. They just verify that. And then it's like, okay, you owe $25,000 in taxes. You paid in $23,000. You owe $2,000, or vice versa. You paid 20, you know, 26.
Right.
Yeah. Really takes the pressure off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So we got 1099s or not. And we recognize our revenue. The 1099s are not easy to understand, are they?
They're not. And I think especially with Amazon, there are certain transactions that are included in your revenue, but then they're backed out as a fee. That's why I have a guide for that too, where we actually take the year-end summary report and show you how to reconcile that to the 1099 so you know exactly.
And how much does that cost?
Oh, it's free.
It's free. It's free. You're going to get a common theme here. Again, this is the nerds of us talking, but it's true. And it gives away all the information for free. She really does. And there's no hidden tricks, no nothing.
Yep.
However, you do sell services. And I qualify that again because I'm going to let her pitch her services eventually. And Steve doesn't benefit in any way other than you get to really establish. This is really, you know, I know it sounds so basic, but this is really when people grow up, their business grows up, isn't it? When they get to this mm-hmm. stuff and they start addressing this stuff, isn't it when they're like, okay, now I'm a real business?
It is. And the nice thing is when people do this and they start when they're smaller, they can master it on a small scale. And then as their business evolves and grows, so does their accounting skill. You don't want to start learning all of this when you're a $2 million seller. I mean, that's just a bad idea.
When they do evolve to a certain point, that's when you do have to get help too. And knowing this in advance, you know, for example, you've had people come to you with the shoebox, right? The old famed shoebox mm-hmm. of receipts. And it's like, oh dear God, what do I do with that, right? Or you've had people come to you with a really good set of clean books, either GoDaddy or QuickBooks or, you know, Xero, any of those. And that's when you can start. I mean, can't you help coach somebody from that point of view, like here's what you can do next in your business, as opposed to the shoebox where you're just trying to get them to file, right? I mean, you can either work on your business or work at your business?
Either work on it or work in it.
Yeah.
Well, and I think something that you said about working on your business, I wanted to just mention, I also pay a CPA to do my taxes, because I don't enjoy doing it, but it's a nuanced field. And, you know, it's forever changing. And just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. And so I'm encouraging everyone listening, please get a CPA to prepare your taxes for you. If we do it, you can do it.
Yeah.
Right?
I haven't done them in years because, again, I don't want to learn, you know, all the things that mm-hmm. need that change every year. And right now, for example, there's some kind of new crazy tax law they changed in 2018. I don't want to know any of it. I'll be honest with you. I need to know, you know, the key things.
Right.
And when you sit down with your accountant and go through and, you know, or a good accountant will actually about 2 or 3 quarters of the year say, okay, how's business this year? What's happening? You know, what mm-hmm. should we be looking for? They're looking for anomalies, anything that's unusual, right?
Right.
Or if it's status quo, okay, great. And then when you sit down with them and go through their invoice, because they always invoice you, and it always, here's a little pro tip too. They'll mark it up and then they'll lower it and say, I'm saving you money. You know, that's a little pro tip. That's a sales, assumed sale, I guess. I don't know what it is. I'm always like, really? You're saving me money? Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, but that's the place where the conversation is like, wait, what else can I do? Well, you could go to an S corporation and you can save, you know, blah, 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 blah. Oh, mm-hmm. really? What are the implications of that? That conversation is so much better than, oh my God, you know, did we get everything in? You know, all that nonsense, right? Mm-hmm. You get at that maturity level.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we got a 1099, and it's going to help us try to understand it. how complicated the PayPal / eBay 1099 is? Pretty simple. It's just one number.
Exactly. It's a lot easier. You know, you earned what you earned, and then it'll show the fees that the seller was charged for shipping, and then a monthly fee for eBay. It's all there in a really nice summary report.
Yeah, they've done a good job with that. Have you seen from other sellers like an Etsy or anything like that? I'm not familiar with that.
Actually, I have two Etsy sellers I work with, and they're not at the point in time that the $20,000 trigger would come into play, but I don't know that that's the trigger or not. So okay. I'm curious about that too.
Yeah, no, I don't know, but you're still responsible to report it, right? So basically yep. It's here's what I sold, here's my returns, here's my net revenue, here's my expenses or my cost of goods, and then starting from there, then your individual expenses. I mean, that's really it. How about one of the other things I've seen a lot of sellers not do is keeping mileage logs or using mileage apps or any of those things. What could you tell us about that?
Well, it's really important. In 2018, the mileage rate will be going up, and you know, a penny doesn't sound like much, but it does add up. One member of the community said he drives, I think he said almost 60,000 miles a year, which is amazing for his business, and he's very excited about it. And it's really important. One thing I want to caution people is if you're using accounting software, the mileage deduction is a deduction. It's a non-cash deduction. It does not need to go in your accounting software, but you do need to track it and then give that to your CPA so he or she can include it on the return.
So Steve's the old school guy who used to require, you know, think about it, for, you know, 25 years I was in that business, and I always required, you know, beginning odometer, ending odometer, number of miles driven, location driven, and purpose of business. I've just been doing it. So this is old school. I keep legal pads. I mean, I just can't break the habit of it. I still do it. And then, you know, and then at the end of the year, I just add them up. You know, it's pretty simple. And somebody's like, hey, you know, did you go? Yep, here it is. And I have them. And what's cool now is you can scan all that stuff, which is really cool. But I love it. And it's just a habit. I looked at the apps and I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I'm just not an app guy. I just don't like it.
Well, you know, that's such a good point. People have to develop a system that works for them. You know, the requirement is track mileage. It doesn't really matter how you do it as long as you have a system that works for you. And I think that's so important. People ask all the time, well, is this right or that right? And, you know, there are some do's and don'ts. But in general, when you're creating an accounting system, it doesn't matter if you're doing it daily, weekly, you know, whatever the frequency is. I think you're right. Monthly is ideal. Quarterly is best. But if you're working on your books every Friday or every single day for 20 minutes, it really doesn't matter. You have to figure out what works for you, because if it doesn't, you're not going to do it. That's just human nature. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I do. And I think what you just said, you got to schedule in time. I think that that's such a powerful. So, you know, I'm only, you know, the 4-hour work week. Yeah, right. There's no such thing. That doesn't exist. Well, I mean, it can exist. And there are some people that are amazing at it, but that comes at a cost, right? If you want to pay somebody to do that, and Anna will do it for you, but there's a fee, right? And so you can get some of that stuff limited. But when you work on your business, there's something very rewarding to, I mean, this is going to sound really goofy to people, but reconciling a bank statement, there's something rewarding there. I mean, I don't know what it is.
It's so rewarding. It's like getting a jigsaw puzzle finished or something.
No, people definitely think we're nerds, but it's the truth. All right. So here's a powerful one that I remember from last time we talked, and it stayed with me because it's so good. I mean, I love your naming convention for handling receipts. Do you still use the same method?
Oh yes. We were talking about, using a certain mnemonic?
Use the date, right? I think the way I remember it. Now this is Steve memory, and you know, then again, remember I have that male gene, so you know it's going to be factored, right? Yeah, caution. But it was basically, if I remember correctly, it was basically you use the date. So I bought something today, so you have today's date. Mm-hmm. You might have the store name in there too. However, by putting it in by date, where am I going to buy? 5 different places. I mean, it was just so easy by that purchase date. Mm-hmm. When I put it into either ScanPower Inventory Lab or even in Amazon, wherever I'm keeping that record, you could just look that date up, and it just immediately allowed you to find the receipt. Was that the way it was?
Yes, I recall that conversation now, because I think less is more, and people try to, you know, put all of these things in it, and it's really not necessary. It needs to be a unique identifier so that you can find it easily.
A consistent unique identifier.
Right, but not something so complicated. associated. You know, it doesn't need to be like a vehicle VIN number, and I've seen them like that. There's just no need for that, because then it doesn't become helpful or useful.
Well, and I don't think it's sustainable. And I think that the key is you never build a you never build processes for the extremes or the anomalies. You build the process for the 98%, right? Mm-hmm. That 98% of the time, or 99.999% of the time, business is this. We never want to build for the extremes because, yeah, they happen, but they're so rare, and they could be, you know, they vary from time to time. Are you still keeping your paper version? And I know you're going to say yes, in an envelope with the month on it.
I do. Just I do. Like you with your legal pad. It's my whoopee. I admit it. I can't get rid of it. But, you know, once they're scanned, you know, people can exercise their own judgment as to whether or not that's necessary. I prefer to, but that's just me.
Well, after your returns are accepted, how many years are you required to keep that?
I think it's 7 now, isn't it?
Okay. I could be. I don't know. I just give it to my accountant and he holds it.
Well, I keep them all. I'm covered no matter what.
you have them since, this is my return, like little children, right? I mean, exactly. this is the 2002. Look at that. Look at the way it's aging. It's just beautiful. Well, I just think that's a very strong practice that somebody can put into place now. They didn't do it last year. Okay. So I just saw this message, 10K in the Bay. Chris Lynn was talking about something about eBay, and he was talking about photos and how you really have to have good quality photos and blah, 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 blah. And his point is, look, don't go back and fix things. Let that crap sell through. Mm-hmm. Fix it going forward, and you will eventually evolve into that. That's really the same message here, right? Putting these practices into place today now fixes it for this year. Last year is last year. Don't go back and try to fix last year. Close last year and fix this year going forward and make these really part of your practice. The fact that you haven't changed your receipt process, I think, is powerful because it works, right? Mm-hmm. You haven't had to evolve. There hasn't been a way to reduce a touch point there. It works. Simple.
Yep, I agree. And, you know, that's such a good point that you're making too. People sometimes say, all right, I'm using software now. Do I need to go back all 4 years of my business and put it into the software? And my answer is generally no, because you've already filed the tax returns. You have those. Just start from the last tax return and build on that.
I would even expand it to say, unless it's helping you make a decision, you know, then don't do it. If it's not going to help you make decisions, you know, where mm-hmm. you can do, because like, it is cool when your certain software show year over year. That's cool. That's cool to look at, but if you're not going to do anything with it, why waste the time, right?
Exactly. If you're going to sell your business or think you might want to, well, then, you know, you could make the
different
argument
story.
That you would want to do that. So you're right. Think about the purpose, what your goal is, and then make the decision, because there's no reason to do work for the sake of work. We have enough work already.
Hmm. So what have you changed? Because this, I think, is a fair question. What have you done different this year? Or what do you plan on doing different this year? Because you're not perfect, right? I'm sure you've got, you know, it's the auto mechanic who doesn't work on his own car, right? And neglects it, right? I'm sure that you could improve in some areas. What if you're doing different?
Well, I can tell you I changed entity structure. And you touched on that earlier. For anyone listening, it's a big decision. Definitely talk to your CPA about it, but it can be a money savings on taxes. But there are only certain points in time it actually makes sense.
And again, you want to see a CPA or dare I say, where we got our structure done was he was actually an attorney CPA mm-hmm. and he was very specific on that. And that was very cool because he could still argue in front of the IRS too as a CPA, but it was also, was it an LLM, whatever they call this. He just, that's taxes his thing. And so he really helped with the structure of that thing. And so that's available. And I think my cost, somebody asked me that, what was the cost to get, it was like $1,100 or something like that. It was pretty inexpensive, I thought.
Yeah, that's about what I paid too. So that guy sounds like a super nerd.
yeah, definitely super nerd. High strung too, man. It's like, dude, tone it down a little bit, you know? Get that bow tie off. I don't like those things. I don't like the bow tie. I'm not a fan. Yeah. Anyway.
They're not my favorite.
Not a thing. Even down in the South, they're not a fan, huh?
Well, you know, I think it's, you either can pull it off or you can't.
Yeah, there's zero chance Steve can pull it off. Zero chance. Okay, so We've now addressed the receipt issue. We have addressed the mileage issue. And I think you're right. I like the idea of saying it that way. What works for you as long as you're doing it and you're consistent. I mean, to me, that's the right way to do it. Yeah. Where else have you seen other people improve their business that you thought, huh, that's cool?
That's a great question. You know, one thing I've seen, and this is especially true for people who are keeping up with their books and other benefit, is I've seen this trend of people paying closer attention to their margins and reducing the number of items that they're selling. I know that's not a specific accounting tip, but it's the result of having your books in order and things in place to be able to make those decisions. So I've seen people really starting to use their books more to manage their business, manage and grow it. And I think it goes back to what you said from the beginning, that it's just becoming more and more of a necessity. And I think this last year, I've seen people really start to use their books. You know, they're starting to care about what a balance sheet means and how it interrelates with the profit and loss. And people are starting to understand it's not just about sales. That's an important driver, obviously, but it's not just about that.
Yeah, it used to be revenue cures all, Steve. That's what they used to say to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd go into them like, hey, boys, you know, expenses or blah, blah, blah. Oh, revenue, that's all we need to do is sell more. Well, that's cool. But what if you don't? You know, we got to plan for that. Or what if I could give you, you know, two more points to the bottom line without selling another dime? That's huge, right? Yeah. I mean, 'cause it isn't what you sell, it's what you keep, really, mm-hmm. that matters. So you're seeing that more and more. Is that a surprise? Or again, is that a maturity as these businesses start to grow and mature?
I think for me, it was a surprise. People weren't paying attention to that from the beginning. But I think that's because, maybe I'm wrong, but I think it used to be a little bit easier in this business to make money. There were less people and Amazon's always changing and all these things we've been talking about. So it's a good thing now that people, they seem to actually really care more. People in the group are very active, very giving, asking all these questions. And it just seems that the things people are asking about are a little bit more sophisticated compared to what they were a couple of years ago. Cool. It doesn't mean that basic questions aren't welcome. They always are. We all start from somewhere, but it seems like the sellers are kind of evolving and maturing also, which is kind of neat to see.
It's very neat to see. And matter of fact, the fact that you're just talking about sophisticated, I was just thinking about this too. Somebody was talking about putting a warehouse together. And I thought to myself, have you ever owned inventory in a city that charges inventory? Have you ever seen that where cities charge inventory by the month, an inventory valuation fee?
Oh, you know what? They do that in Georgia, actually. I have seen that, but it's by county, I think.
Okay. So what we're describing is if you hold inventory for a certain period of time, it becomes a taxable event. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you pay tax. Not a lot of tax, can be, depending on the value, right? I think it's value, valuation. So if you have $100,000 worth of inventory and it stays there for X period of time, and each place is different how they calculate it, there's a valuation charge, just like, you know, you hear this Nexus phrase, which I really don't want to talk about, but it's the concept is that you have an asset that's in our town, therefore we want piece of that value. That is something you absolutely need. This is one of those sophisticated things to find out. If you're in a big city, it's much more prevalent, like Philadelphia, for example. Mm-hmm. That's there. That's real, right? And I don't know the ins and outs, but these are the things that you really, again, need to start considering. This is not something you do and then pull the trigger. This is the conversation you have with that CPA or that advisor in an advisory role, as opposed to getting your books done. It's like, okay, now I want to work on my business. These are the kind of things you want to have the discussion. Hey, what if I did this? Whoa, Steve, that creates an event. Mm-hmm. Oh, so maybe it's not such a good idea because this, right? What you thought was an easy decision, again, you might not end up making money.
Right, exactly. An event translates into taxes owed.
yeah. And they want them paid too. It used to be the Delaware Corporation, right? That was one of the big things everybody did, right? Create a Delaware Corporation because that was a tax-friendly state, still is. And therefore, you didn't have to pay state taxes, right? They paid they had this goofy, I don't know, whatever. But I think most states have unwound that now. Mm-hmm. When you say sophisticated, what other things have you seen people talking about that are like, whoa, that's pretty high level stuff?
Well, I think some more analytical review of financials has been going on. You know, for example, profit margin percentages. People at one point in time were very interested in sales minus the cost of goods sold. What's the
number? So gross profit.
Right. And now people are starting to look at the actual profit margins. How am I doing? You know, not just what my sales are, but how, like you said, not what you make, but what you keep. People are looking at payroll as a percent, as a percentage. People are looking at their debt to inventory ratios, which I'm such a big fan of, and I'm so glad. You know, people are really starting to look at these numbers and pay attention.
Are there any places that are tracking these metrics that are putting out best practices or something to start measuring yourself against? Because I think that's powerful.
You know, I wish there were places that were doing that, but it is powerful. Part of the problem is there's plenty of information about retail, but it's usually brick and mortar. And I think because online sales is a little bit different, but the same thing. I don't think that the same ratios always apply. They're a good rule of thumb, but I think it's a lot different when you have a brick and mortar versus, you know, you're selling online.
Absolutely. And but those numbers are equally important. So somebody needs to start doing that. There's an opportunity for somebody. Somebody would pay for that service, right? The old LexisNexis, people used to pay for those services.
Yes.
And so therefore, hey, somebody would buy that. Hint, somebody. Steve's not doing it.
Anna's not doing it, but I think that's a great idea. I would buy it.
Wouldn't you want to know, you know, relative to others in similar like businesses, how you measure? Because ultimately, when you see a discrepancy, right, you see a plus or a minus, and it's both, you want to understand why, right? That's where the meat is, that delta. There's a difference. Why? What makes me better? Maybe I'm missing something. What makes me worse? Maybe I'm missing something, right? And that's really powerful to know.
It is powerful. You know, a good example of that also, which I've seen and I think is really neat, people realizing more sales cost money. You've got to have warehouse and people. And I think sellers are starting to realize it's going to cost me to get more sales. It may not be worth it to get as big as I possibly can get. It's not really about that. And I think it took people learning, some even the hard way, that if I have more sales, I need to have more help, more processes, this, that, and the other, and that gets more expensive.
And diminishing returns, right? So that last box sold could be very, very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And it undoes the beginning, what you did so well on sometimes.
Exactly.
And that's the Kmarts of the world, right? You know, now mm-hmm. they're looking at how many times have they redone their leases because they, you know, at the time when their sales were, you know, $50 million a store, or I don't even know if they were that much, like, $10 million a store, $20 million a store, it mm-hmm. wasn't an expensive lease.
Right.
Now, however, when their sales are $6 million a store, oh my God, right? It's a powerful driver. And labor costs. I've seen some of the posts from some of the people too. Labor costs, what makes sense when you're at one size, or what labor arrangement, you know, a percentage of revenue. That's good, but if it's profitable revenue,
right.
If it's not, and you're only paying on revenue, and it's not on the end. The better model is to pay based on the profit margin that or profit number that was driven, because then it's truly variable, right? Because if Amazon raises their fees, God forbid, that might happen someday, that will cut in. So you sold an item for $10 and now Amazon charges you $4 instead of $3. That's painful.
It is.
They might raise their fees one of these days, right?
I think they will.
That's a big issue. Storage has become a massive, massive mm-hmm. issue. And it's like accelerating. Let me say it this way. Shipping and storage has become a massive issue because I don't know how it's working in your business. Oh, we should qualify this. Anna is a seller and has been a seller, does private label in addition to what else she sells.
Yes.
And you've been selling for quite a while. So she truly understands our business. But in Steve's world, we're seeing increases on our own merchant fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
So the post office rates have been adjusted, you know, dozens of times in the last couple of years by sizes, by layers, by elimination, by all these different things. And you got to pay attention to that. Our Amazon stuff, I tell this story. I used to sell books years and years and years and years ago. And in the old days, they used to offer a book rate. So when you shipped via UPS to an Amazon warehouse and it was books, it was a media mail rate. You literally paid mm-hmm. less than you were sending razor blades to Amazon. And a couple of years ago, they changed it and they put that right in with, then I had to start sending my books to other places. And it's mm-hmm. like, huh. And so that is a cost increase. And if you didn't build that into your model on books that you bought 10 years ago that never sold, you're now probably underwater, right?
Yes.
So we're seeing on that end. And then my freight rates via UPS to send into Amazon, while they're still cheaper than anything else, they are higher. And then on the other end, the storage fees that used to be once a year, now are twice a year, and the monthly fees, and then it goes up, what, four times the rate? I think I figured out, and I don't know if I'm right, that it's like $700 a pallet for storage in the month of October, November, and December.
Wow.
A 4x4x4x4, whatever, 64 cubic feet. For some reason, I did that math, and it came up to like $700. I'm like, no way.
I don't know why you did it, but I'm glad you did. That's really interesting.
But I don't know that I'm right. I don't know that I'm right. But I remember looking, I'm like, ooh, got to figure that out. So those two things, to me, are related. What should businesses be thinking about here?
Well, you know, I think really the whole point of a business is to make sure it meets your personal financial goals. Define what those are, and then kind of reverse engineer. Instead of saying, I want six figures in sales, instead figure out what you want to keep. What are you trying to do? What is your why? Then you can start working into that, because you might find, or one might find, that there are other controllable buttons and levers, you know, the costs and expenses that you can control more, so that sales can remain where they are. You can reduce this expense or that expense and still meet your goal. And I think that, you know, speaks to what you were saying earlier.
It's a very powerful thing. And again, these are changes outside of your control. You have no say in the post office raising their prices, UPS, FedEx, DHL, or you have no say in Amazon raising their prices. What can you do, though? Is there anything that you can do, or have you seen anybody doing anything to start addressing these things?
Gosh, you know, one thing I have seen is people who are bigger private label sellers buying larger quantities of things from maybe China, because if you're buying more at one time, that's less expensive on shipping to get to you or to Amazon than buying the same amount over a longer period of time in shorter shipment installments.
Okay. And so, and then the other thing that I've seen some of the private label sellers do it too, more so, and wholesale sellers too, is they're using outside companies to, or themselves, to manage their inventory much closer. It's almost like, remember when just-in-time inventory came into play?
Yes.
We're both about that age. And it was just interesting back when they were getting that, I think it was from Japan or what have you. And it was like, boy, they, you know, the stores that, you know, I remember, or the doing inventory, and there used to be enormous things of inventory. And then it kind of went away because you were able to get it. You were starting to manage that so much better. That's really powerful for a seller. From a competitive point of view, that's a really powerful tool, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that can really make or break whether or not a product is worth selling or not. It's really important.
What you were also describing got me thinking about this too, is that, you know, status quo might not be so good when you start looking at real profit and loss per item, when you're working on your business at that level because you have good books. There's stuff that you might not be making money on that you used to make money because of changes that were made outside of your control.
Yes.
And that's probably one of the biggest reasons to get control of your books.
I completely agree. You know, we don't want to be working for nothing, and we certainly don't want to work to lose money. And it's really important to make sure that we understand what's going on with our inventory.
I just watched, I'm for some reason, YouTube feeds you stuff that, you know, you watch one, it's a rabbit hole, and then all of a sudden they feed you. So it was one on this person bought something from Craigslist, and it was a dresser they restored. And I was like, oh my God, it's beautiful what they did. And she's like, yeah, I put $55 into it, and I can sell it for $150. Then at the end, she qualifies, I put 48 hours into it. And I'm thinking,
That's
$2 an hour. I'm like, oh my God. I mean, I guess if you love it, that's cool. But I'm thinking, ooh, that's not a good business model. That's not a way to make a living. I'm like,
no,
ooh.
It's not.
You know, but that's important to know.
Yeah.
Right? It really is.
Such a good point. I completely agree. You know, I see sometimes people saying, I only got 4 hours worth of sleep and I got this mega shipment out. Well, you know, that's not really a badge of honor. Every now and then that's going to happen, but that shouldn't be, you know, the regular operating procedure.
It used to be the bad, oh, I worked 48 hours in these last 3 days. And I'm like, oh, not anymore. Now it's like, man, I'm sorry. I feel bad for you. Wait till you get old. When you get up and your hands hurt, you know, stuff starts to hurt, man. Parts start falling off. It's like, ooh. So what else can we advise people? And this is advice, free, so take it for what it's worth. But what else can we help people think about to work on their business this year that, you know, they didn't get to last year? What would you say?
You know, I think having a plan for the future, not living in the moment, like I can't wait to see what my numbers are for January.
But that's instead, a big one. Not living in the moment. Ooh, Anna, yeah. Just went deep. I love that one.
But think about
that's a merch shirt.
What are the goals for the year, the quarter? And I think one of the reasons that's tough in this business is because Q4 sales in general for many sellers are just unpredictable and crazy and, you know, sometimes bigger than you expect. So I think a lot of people aren't really planning month at a time. They're just kind of thinking, all right, Q4 is going to make my year. And my suggestion is for people to have a little bit more holistic view of what they're doing.
There are some people that actually only operate an FBA business in one quarter, mm-hmm. and they make all their profits in 1 year for the year. And that's a pretty awesome thing. I mean, but I would call them outliers. I mean, that is not an easy task to do.
I would too. But you know what? If people think about what their why is and quantify that, they could find out, you know what? The amount of money that I'm making in the other three quarters isn't really material to my overall goal. Think of what I could get as far as time back if I didn't and I only sold in Q4. And
think of how many guitars you could strum on a beach, sipping a cold drink.
Dresses you could redo for $150.
Yeah, make $6, right? Yeah. But it's true. You're right. That's a valid point. So your point is, if you know, right, if you do the work and invest into your books, you could tell that.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. You might not like what you find, though. I think that's part of it, too. I think that's one of the reasons people don't do it. They might not like what they see.
I totally agree. It's almost like stepping on the scale after vacation. No one likes to do it, but you've got to know the number to do something about it. And it's the exact same with people's books. You have to know the number to do something about it. But if you don't know the number, ignorance is bliss.
So if you like what Anna is saying, she does offer services. So I'm going to let her pitch her services because, now I've known Anna for several years now, and I love the consistency. You've never charged for all the free stuff you give away. It's always been there. You're always willing to help people. Your group is free, and it's an amazing group. There's so much. And what I like is lots of times the advice, it's not even advice. It's, hey, here's the practice that I use. Here's an approach I use or whatever. And then the experts weigh in, but it's just so cool to see like, other people have these same challenges. And in your group, which is called, say it again.
Accounting We Will Go.
Accounting We Will Go. Yeah, it is really. Actually, it should be a book. Somebody should make a children's book. Accounting We Will Go and little rabbits and stuff. I can see them holding baskets, you know.
Yes.
I have that vision for some reason. with nice fabric, by the way. It's an inside joke for Anna and I.
Yes.
Accounting We Will Go, and I'll have a link to it. That's a Facebook group. It's free. She just wants to make sure you're real. No negativity. It's all positive. No complaining. These are real world things. You do offer services. So talk about the services that you offer.
I do. You can also find information on my website, accountingwewillgo.com. The services I offer are, I have several courses I've developed. And the reason I developed the courses is because of the second service I offer, which is bookkeeping. And bookkeeping is a great solution for many people, but for others, their business doesn't support the cash flow. And so I have.
And that's real. That's important.
Yeah, it is important.
You shouldn't start a business and then have all your expenses going to bookkeeping.
Mm-mm.
No. Buy inventory. You got to buy inventory,
exactly.
Right? I mean, that's important.
Well, and that's kind of what I've done. I have the three levels or the three stages. One is everything is in the group free. You could literally go in there and learn everything you need to. Then the second level is, you know what? I think I want to learn more about how to do my books, but I don't want to sift through the group and find the answers to my questions and read the FAQ. So I have courses organized and I have a basics accounting where it is foundational and it teaches you everything you need to know about an e-commerce business. Then after that, I have a very specific for QuickBooks Online, a course that will teach you how to do your bookkeeping in QuickBooks. Then when people get past that or they feel that they're ready for bookkeeping, I provide bookkeeping services. And I always tell people, the ideal client that I work with is the type of client I have the best relationships with and the best success with for the seller and for me. They need to be able to afford $350 a month in bookkeeping. Anything less than that, it just doesn't make sense for the seller or for me. And you know, you might be asking, well, what level of sales would that equal? It's kind of tough to say because you could have good margins and plenty left over to spend on bookkeeping. But I've noticed in general around $100,000 in sales, it starts to make sense to get a bookkeeper.
$100,000 a year.
$100,000 a year. Yes. $100,000 a year. You know, that's the point in time you need to start thinking about entity structure, and it might make sense to invest in a different type of entity structure. So I think those things go hand in hand. I work with Amazon sellers primarily. I have one seller who sells on five platforms, so that's not a limitation, but the primary source of revenue is an Amazon seller, and I use QuickBooks Online. And that's the criteria that I've found that is the most successful for me and the seller.
Is the bookkeeping, I mean, you're helping prepare my books, and then there basically you help create the file, run the report, whatever the file for the accountant to do their taxes, right? I mean, that's the level. Do you also, for that bookkeeping fee, is there consulting? Is there a best practice? Because one of the cool things you do is you get to see multiple versions, right? Because you maybe look at 20 or 30 companies, you get to see who's doing it right. Do you offer advice to others for that? You know, not specific saying, hey, Steve's business is doing it right, or not, right? But it's basically like, hey, you know, here's an opportunity for you, I see.
Oh, absolutely. And I really love doing that. And what's interesting is a lot of people don't want to stop and take the time to do that. But I'm always happy and love going over financials with people. I will tell you that I am proactive, though, if I see something that's maybe not heading in the right direction. You know, the famous bad direction to go in this business is having too much debt on inventory.
Oh,
and
yes.
I mean, that's just asking for it, you know. So if I start to see these patterns and trends that don't look healthy, I will reach out and say, hey, let's have a conversation about this. And I provide services either quarterly or monthly. Some people just really want to get into it quarterly, but then some people really want to know monthly what their bottom line is and how they're doing.
That's awesome. And that's the smartest way. I mean, that's the best place to get to when you know by month, by product, when you get to that level and you know your fixed costs and your variable costs and all that kind of stuff. And it sounds foreign. But again, if you want all those things and you're saying, how do I do that in addition to what I'm doing, Steve? Well, there's the answer is you hire somebody like Anna. And, you know, they always say this, it's like a lawyer or an accountant, a good one will save you more than they cost. I went to accounting school and I have a master's degree, but I still pay somebody and they do save me more money because they keep up on it. And that's really the key is they keep up on it, right? It's not that I'm not smart enough to do it. I'm not willing to do what it takes to know that because it would suck all the other time that I have to do other things, right?
Exactly. And just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. We were talking about that earlier and you know, I always suggest that people value, you know, try to quantify your time. What do you think you're worth hourly? How many hours do you spend on, you know, bookkeeping or whatever you're considering outsourcing? And the answer, it kind of answers itself.
Right. Right. Yeah. And especially if you don't enjoy it. I mean, if you don't enjoy it, there are just some things I don't like to do. Guess what? I'm paying somebody else to do them. So,
ooh, absolutely.
Love it.
Absolutely.
All right, Anna, give us one thing. All right, I'm going to narrow you down to one thing that no matter what, it's 2018, somebody new or messed up who starting over, because it's a new birth. 2018 is a new year. This is a chance to do, this is a do-over, right? They get a do-over and it starts. What's the one thing that people need to do today, this week, this month, to really set themselves up for success this year?
Oh, I love this question. The number one thing people need to do and continue to do is please, please, please know how much you hold in unsold inventory. The value is based on what you paid, not what you expect to sell it for. Always know that number. Make sure you know that number just like you know your home address. That is your business, and you never want to have too much, and you never want to have not enough. But I have found probably 85% of the time people are holding far more than they realize they do.
Far more.
And it's a scary thing. You know, you have to think if, you know, the business were to close today, how much inventory am I holding that I need to figure out how to get rid of? And you never want to have too much exposure.
And that's a real issue, especially if you have a spouse and that's now looming over their head,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, something happens to you, somebody's got to deal with that. And it's we've had that in my house many times, that discussion is like, what do we do? Mm-hmm. Because that's an issue. Now, the good news is we don't carry debt. So that part isn't, but if you add that into it, that factor is huge. Now, all of a sudden, it really changes things because guess what? That debt doesn't die with you because you have assets there. So, okay. All right. So, best place to get. So, we got accountingwewillgo.com. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going to have all this information. We have the Accounting We Will Go Facebook group. I'll put that out there too. So, I'm going to have links to all this. Steve doesn't benefit in any way other than having you, the seller, get control of their business and have incredible success and send me notes like, oh my God, Anna Hill is the best thing. I've sent sliced bread, that bread slicer right there. And there's Anna right next to it. Just amazing, right?
That's awesome.
And then can I put your Facebook contact there too?
Yes, please do.
Okay. Man, oh man. Anna, it is such a pleasure talking with you again. Episode 98 is where her story, she does have a story. It's a very cool story. And it's very cool that you still sell and you sell a lot. To me, that's what makes this, that's what makes you so important to this business because you live and breathe it. You get to experience the same ups and downs that we all do. And I think that that's so powerful.
Well, thank you. I love it. It's such an exciting opportunity for people to make a positive difference in their life. And I feel very fortunate to be a part of the online selling world community.
Well, we're fortunate to have you. Thank you so much. I wish you nothing but success.
Thank you. Take care. I enjoyed it. I'll talk to you later.
Told you, we got to some good places there. Smart lady, just a real genuine person. And I can't recommend her enough. I mean, I really believe in her. And when I look for it, it's consistency. And so I've now known her for several years, and she's exactly the same today as she was. And that's all positive stuff. So if you can benefit from her, I have all those links on the episode. And I just think that, again, getting to know your business is such a great thing. And bringing partners on, that's what I call these people, partners, because I have several of them in our business that help us run our business. And they just have brought us to places that are just so, it's such a wonderful thing. ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Don't forget my sponsors, Seller Solutions for E-commerce, Karen Locker. Man, she's just cranking along. She's gotten so many new customers. Thanks for the listening and the listeners signing up for it. But I've got so many comments like, oh my God, she's the best thing since sliced bread because she's helped me do this and she's helped me do this. Let me tell you, she's helped me. She's an important part. And in March or February, I meet with one of our big distributor companies and we're planning out the new year for Christmas. Believe it or not, we're actually planning then. And when you get to that level of relationship, you get invited in those conversations, right? You become their e-commerce solution. Well, guess what? Immediately, I'm like, okay, Karen, here are the things that we're going to be doing. And she'll roll backwards like, okay, I'll need this and this and this and this. And it really becomes part of the team. And it's so cool because we're all in different places around the country, and yet we're able to do it. And that's what having a partner like Karen has done for me. So solutions, the number 4, ecommerce.com. /momentum will save you $50 off of her services, and $50 is $50, and it's an awesome thing. And I can't recommend enough. Solutionsforecommerce.com /momentum, save you $50, and she still does your inventory health report. Start out the new year knowing your inventory health. It's very, very important. Ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.